Hi, everybody, and welcome to Will and Amala Live. Of course, you all know Will is not here today, so.
Amala, Will is back. He's literally sitting right next to you.
What's up, guys?
That's not Will. That's
yeah,
not Will.
He's back from his book tour. How's the book tour going, by the way, Will?
It's going well, man. We are pretty close to hitting the bestseller list.
That's what I hear. That's really great news.
Guys, that's not Will. He's black.
Hey. That is definitely, I don't know what's it gotten into you, but hats off for not seeing race.
Are you guys listening? That is not Will. Look. I shaved Will's mustache 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, I shaved Will's mustache.
Amala,
this is Will.
Amala, this, look at the picture. And scene.
Guys, welcome to Will and Amala Live, except today it's not Will and Amala Live. It is Zuby and Amala Live. Zuby's on the podcast. Thank you
I'm
for coming
here.
On.
I'm good. Happy to be here. How you doing?
I'm great. Now, for some people seeing you right now, they may not recognize you. Zuby, who are you? What got you in this space? And why is that important?
I'm an independent rapper, author, host of the Real Talk with Zuby podcast, public speaker, and all-round creative entrepreneur. I've been in the world of music for 15 years. I've put out 9 independent releases, 6 albums and 3 EPs, sold a lot of albums independently, traveled the world a lot. And in the last couple of years, I've found myself in this weird place of being a little bit of a sociocultural warrior and a public voice for a lot of people, really for myself, but off the back of that, you know, as a byproduct for a lot of people as well.
That's interesting. So it's not what you set out to do. How did you sort of stumble into the space of the socio-political realm?
So in 2018 in particular, I just started being a little more open about some of my views. So conversations that I was having privately with friends and with family and with other people, I just started questioning and stating some of my points and my opinions more openly. And that really started resonating with people. I think a lot of people were hungry for it. The reason I started doing it actually was because I was concerned about the way certain things were going.
Okay.
I mean, let alone this is before where we are now. And also because I wasn't really seeing a lot of people saying what I wanted to say in the way I wanted to say it. So not a lot of people were really representing my view and my perspective. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, if I'm concerned about the way things are going, at some point, if you remain silent, you're complicit.
Right.
So I felt an ethical compulsion and maybe just my personality type is like, man, I have to jump in the fray a little bit and express some of those views. And when I did, it really started resonating with thousands of people all across the world. And then I had that deadlift video go super viral at the beginning of 2019. And that put me on the radar of millions of new people. And life has not been the same again.
Yeah, let's talk about the deadlift video. What exactly happened there? Was this a big plan? Did you think it was going to go viral? How did this happen?
No. So I think we've both come to public prominence through things that we didn't necessarily expect to go as far as they did. So I'd seen these stories for a long time of, you know, biological males saying they're trans, or whether they are trans, I don't know. But biological males competing against biological women in their sports. Mm-hmm. So I just posted this tweet saying, you know, I keep hearing about how biological men have no strength advantage over women in 2019. So watch me destroy this British women's deadlift record without trying. P.S. I identified as a woman while lifting the weight. Mm-hmm. Don't be a bigot. I thought it was a little bit funny. So I put that out there. I had had about 18,000 followers on Twitter at the time, you know, gained over 500,000 since then. And that just blew up.
Yeah.
The video got millions of views. It was shared by some major personalities in the UK, in the US, in Australia, all over the place, all over the world. People were talking about this video and it introduced people to me. So once people saw that, it wasn't just that little clip itself that went viral, but people discovered me and found my music and what I'm all about. And I became this personality that a lot of people, you know, many love. Some do not love.
Some hate, yeah.
I'm just me. I'm just me. And so it's not how I expected to come to prominence in any way, shape, or form. But that's just how it worked out.
Yeah, no, there's something to be said about people who recognize the bystander effect and go, you know what, I'm going to hop into the space. Mm-hmm. Did you have any sort of fear before stepping out on the internet and truly espousing your views? Or you just went for it?
Not particularly. Not massively. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't fear a lot. And I think that's one of my superpowers is I really don't fear much. People are always trying to project their fears onto me in all different ways. I mean, the whole past year and a half has been people trying to project their fear onto me. And people are always trying to project their fears onto me in all different sorts of ways. And I'm just like, look, I'm not afraid of that. Like, I'm not afraid of people. I'm not afraid of the internet mob. I'm not afraid of criticism. I'm not afraid of much. And so what would cow or silence most people is totally ineffective on me. If anything, it emboldens me even further. So I guess, you know, to use Nassim Taleb's term, I'm kind of anti-fragile right. in that regard, as in the harder people come at me or push back or whatever, like the stronger I get.
Yeah. And I think it's something that you sort of gain as you step into the space more and more, and the backlash gets greater and greater. And it's actually a perfect segue into our first story. This story is about Pastor Artur Pawlowski. You guys know him. You love him. We shared his videos of him in Canada keeping his church open during the COVID-19 lockdown regulations, shouting at the police officers, calling them Gestapo, saying that they were not welcome in his church. You Gestapo are not welcome here.
Amazing.
And he was viral. He was a sensation. He was saying things that people didn't want to say, but that comes with a little bit of trouble. And speaking of not having fear, Pastor Artur Pawlowski has now returned to Canada from the U.S. and has subsequently been arrested. Here's the video.
Stand up.
And there is Pastor Pawlowski. Now, in a statement, he said, "If I do not go and face them like a man, then everything I did means nothing. I will show the world who they are." He is now facing up to 6 years in jail for his offenses against the regulations.
It's disgusting.
It is disgusting. And I think there's a lot of support being garnered for this man, but now he's at the hands of the Canadian government. So I wonder where that's going to go. Where do you see this going?
Look, I think good wins. Evil can only win for so long. Mm-hmm. And this is evil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't try to use that term flippantly. But when I see something like this, I think it's true evil. I mean, think of what this man is being arrested for.
Right.
He's being arrested for, this is a pastor who is being arrested for keeping his church open in the midst of, you know, in defiance of the government.
Right.
That actually says so much about society when you really think of it, right? Because I've been saying for a long time that there's a very religious element to a lot of what's been happening across the past year and a half. And if you think about it, COVID is treated more highly than God in Western society.
You're absolutely right. Okay? Absolutely right.
You're not allowed, if you deny the existence of COVID on YouTube, you get kicked off of YouTube.
Yep.
Right? You have to believe in it, right? I'm not saying that COVID doesn't exist, but I'm saying that you can make all the anti-theist videos and content you want in the world, and you can put them all out there. But if you question the COVID narrative, all of a sudden, you're the heretic who needs to be burned at the stake. So, you know, the COVIDians, as I call them, have really made a whole religion out of this thing. Look at this guy outside. I mean, look at this. He's wearing gloves. He's got the mask on. He's wearing this garb. As someone who grew up in the Middle East, I'm amazed by how enthusiastically Westerners have embraced the face veil, right? All you had to do was tell them it was about science.
Right.
And all of a sudden they've adapted to this. And it's, man, I could probably preach on this for an hour.
And you can. But, that's what we're here for.
No, I don't think this is not sustainable.
No,
it's not sustainable. The levels of evil and deception and malice that are going on, especially by the state, agents of the state, corruption in the scientific community, the medical community. It's a house of cards. They can push people so far. They can coerce people so far. But you can't get away with stuff like this indefinitely. Like it will get exposed. It's already being exposed. People are waking up out of this malaise.
Yeah.
And the more and more they push to this sort of extent, or when you're seeing police in Australia putting the boot to people literally, or punching people, shooting people with rubber bullets, all in the name of supposedly public health and safety.
Right.
You know, some people are still asleep, but stuff like that, it's a shame it has to go that far. But You know, some people don't believe the tyranny until the jackboots are at their door.
It is very, very true. Yuri Bezmenov, a KGB defector, said that, you know, a man will never know true tyranny and never know what he's advocated for until the military boot hits him in the balls.
There you go.
And that's exactly what needs to happen. And that's what's happening right here. And thank goodness for, I guess, what we call now internet journalism. And that's people with their phones who are just simply documenting these videos and these occurrences and then talking about what they've seen. Mm-hmm. Because Lord knows what would happen if nobody had filmed this and nobody even knew that it happened. It's really interesting, the sort of new press that we're seeing being built in America.
Mm-hmm. Well, people need to be accountable, you know, and this is another thing that's happened is there's been this whole inversion. People have forgotten what the balance of power is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Right. If you live in the modern Western world, if you live in these supposed republics or liberal democracies, we're not supposed to have rulers. We're not supposed to have, you know, just absolute kings and queens with absolute power or politicians with some absolute power. Essentially, we've got dictatorships now. What is there present right now in Canada, in some blue states across the USA, certainly in Australia, New Zealand, you essentially have dictatorships,
mm-hmm.
right? Masquerading as liberal democracies. Who's voting for all of this stuff? Who said, yeah, we want this. We want our businesses shut. We want to be forced to stay at home. We want to be forced to do this and made to do that. No, people don't want these things. These things are not going to votes. It's just one individual in many cases just running riot with that power. And you see the same thing with police. I think any agent of the state needs to remember who pays their bills. The job of the police is not to be running around arresting, shutting down churches and arresting pastors and harassing peaceful people. That's not what they're supposed to be doing. Politicians are not supposed to be these mini dictators, so they should always be held accountable because ultimately they're employed by us. We pay for their salaries, and the job of the police is to protect the citizens. The job of politicians is to be representatives. That's mm-hmm. what they're called, representatives of their constituencies. They're not just supposed to be, okay, I just get this power and I do whatever the heck I want with it.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it, especially with young people too, is just forgetting what our government runs on and how it runs mm-hmm. and forgetting what representatives are actually meant for. Now, there's an anecdote from our founding father, Benjamin Franklin. In 1787, he exited the Constitutional Convention and a woman walked up to him and said, well, what have you given us? Have you given us a monarchy or have you given us a republic? And he answered this woman by saying, you have a republic if you can keep it. And I think we're seeing that tested right now. We are brushing off the ability to keep our republic. And I like that you said it's a supposed republic. It's a supposed democracy because we're not treating it like that at all. Mm-mm. And we're allowing this. And to see a large sum of our country look at a video like this and clap and cheer it on.
Disgusting.
Yeah. To say that this is justice, that the supposed social justice warriors think that this is right. That is disgusting.
Yeah. It's awful. You know, I've gotten very tired of mincing my words on this stuff. And, you know, it seems like a lot of the opponents to freedom don't want to mince their words either. They've made it very clear where they draw their lines and how they feel about it. So, you know, I'm not going to hesitate to call this evil, to call it despicable, to call it disgusting, because that's absolutely what it is. And one of the worst, you know, I can't remember whose quote this was, but someone said that if you outlaw freedom, then the only free people are outlaws. And this is exactly what's happened. And I think there's a lot of awful things and bad precedents that have been set here. But one of the worst things that's happened across all these countries is turning normal law abiding citizens, decent people, peaceful people who don't want to hurt or harm anybody, criminal, making them criminals.
Right.
Making them criminals. Oh, you've got too many people gathered in one room. You're a criminal. Oh, you strayed too far from your house. You're a criminal. Oh, you want to breathe fresh air and show your face in public, you're a criminal. No matter what you do, wherever you go, you're breaking some law.
Yep.
That's how they used to get people back in the Soviet Union. And it's wild to see this happening in countries like the UK, the USA, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, previous bastions of freedom. If you just went back to 2020, beginning of 2020, and you even told people, like showed someone that video and explained what he was being arrested for,
yeah.
or came and, you know, you just explain any of this stuff from the mask mandates to the lockdowns to the stay at home orders. Do you know what people would say? They'd call you a conspiracy theorist.
They absolutely.
They'd say that can't happen here. They say this isn't China. This isn't North Korea. This is America. Mm-hmm. That can't happen here. This is the UK. That can't happen here. And look at how quickly it happened, and look at how quickly millions of people embraced it.
Yeah, and it's formulaic for nearly every single social issue on the left and on the right. If you want to own a gun legally, you're a killer. If you believe in two binary genders, you're a bigot. If you believe that people should come to a country legally, you're a racist. It's just all of these extremes that get thrown at people who simply want what is normal and what is right.
Exactly.
And you did a piece on this. It was originally a Twitter thread that you put out called 20 Things That I've Learned About Humanity During the Pandemic. Now, this went insanely viral, because I think you distilled down larger ideas of what people were seeing and witnessing and into these sort of bite-sized thoughts. And Daily Wire has now published this as an article, and you've gone more in depth about these 20 things. Mm. I want to get through as many of these as possible and get through an in-depth discussion about it.
All right, let's
get your hot takes here. Number one, most people would rather be in the majority than be right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've seen that now. Regardless of facts, of statistics, of analytics that are put in front of somebody's face, they'd rather support what everybody is supporting mm-hmm. than to go against the grain and actually do something that is right and do something that is just.
Mm. It's a lot easier to do. It's a lot easier. We're social beings. I mean, anytime you enter a situation where you are, you know, especially when it comes to opinions, you know, you're the person with a dissenting viewpoint mm-hmm. or you're in the minority, it can be uncomfortable. It can be uncomfortable. To use a simple one, right? If someone, if there's a room of 100 people, right, and everyone's wearing masks, and you walk in there without one, even if you're like as bold as me and is happy to do that, you still feel a pressure
yep.
to conform. Similarly, if there's a room full of 100 people and they don't have a mask on, like, this could be anything. This could be everyone's wearing white and you walk in wearing red.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like, oh, like, you feel awkward. You feel weird. Right. And that's just human nature. So it's not inherently a bad thing. There's many times where doing what most people do is the correct and proper thing to do. But my point there is that just because it's a majority position or a majority opinion doesn't in itself mm-hmm. mean that it's right. It doesn't mean, you know, the majority is not always wrong,
no.
but the majority is not always right either. So it's just encouraging people to think individually and to have that boldness or courage to question things or to challenge orthodoxy when necessary.
And it's amazing how easily we've lost that sentiment. And I always try to take it back to the founding fathers. They wrote a lot and very in depth about the difference between a majority and minority, and how regardless of what a majority is doing, there should always be space for the minority, and their concerns, their opinions, their facts should be taken just as seriously. And now we don't do that anymore. Mm. It seems like we've been conditioned to believe that if the majority is saying something, well, then that must be right.
Yeah. And sometimes it's simply an illusion of a majority.
Right.
Because sometimes it's actually a minority and they're made to seem much bigger than they are. Right.
Right.
They want you to believe that the majority of people think that there are, I don't know, infinite genders. Right. Or that a man can just magically transform into a woman or vice versa. That's not a majority position.
No, it is not.
No, but it's made to look like one.
Yep.
It's the mainstream position without being a majority position, which is even more bizarre. But This is what goes on. It happens a lot on social media. You can make 1% of the population look like 50%, especially with the magic of technology.
It's very true. And it's demoralizing, because you go and you're just inundated with the same opinion over and over and over. And I try to tell people, a lot of conservatives reach out, I'm sure they reach out to you too, and say, you know, I'm too scared. I'm mm-hmm. too scared. I don't want to do it. I mm-hmm. know this huge mob is going to come after me. Mm-hmm. And if you stop looking at the micro and you look macro, it's really not that large of a mob.
No.
They are just extremely loud and extremely aggressive and extremely assertive. And if we were the same, but mm-hmm. with proper right and just values, the world would be so much better.
Mm-hmm.
But they instill fear in people.
Yes. Conservatives and sane liberals need to be more vocal.
Yes.
Need to be more courageous.
Absolutely right.
And I don't just mean in the pure political sense. I'm talking more in the social and the cultural sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reason why things keep shifting in a bad direction, and, you know, people are complaining about it and whining about it, but at the same time, they also refuse to speak up. And as I've said, you know, in the face of madness, in the face of evil, in the face of true injustice, whatever, you have to speak up,
you
right?
do.
Because it's easy for a loud, aggressive minority to cow a sane majority. And we can't allow that to continue happening. It's been happening for many, many years, and people need to stop that. And I hope that with a lot of what I do and with the words I say, I can encourage other people to be a bit more bold. I'm not even saying not everyone needs to go full Zuby, but like, you know, 10%, 20%, right? In your workplace, at your college, at your school, you know, at your wherever you are, within your family, within your friendship group, you know, be, look, people with the most ridiculous ideas in the world are very, are feeling very emboldened to voice their ideas.
Yes, they are.
Right? I see these crazy TikTok videos coming out of like these bizarre looking people making all their, and they're speaking all confidently. And I was like, man, if I had that view, I'd be ashamed to voice that publicly.
Yeah.
Right? So why is it the people who are sane and who are reasonable are absolutely terrified, right? If someone can jump on this, some 20-year-old can jump on TikTok and be like, talking about how they're like a demigender, two-spirit unicorn who is like sapiosexual, and they feel like confident and bold to say that, you should feel confident to go, you know what, I like Trump. You know what, I voted for Brexit.
Right.
You know what, I like the family. You know what, I believe in like Jesus Christ. You know what, this is my view, that's my view. You know what, I'm pro-life. But people are afraid to do any of that.
Yep.
And people need to stop being so afraid. And there's no point having a silent majority if it's a silenced majority.
You're absolutely right. This leads me.
I'm a little bit passionate.
No, you, as you should be. As you should be. We might go a little longer than normal, guys. Number two here, at least 20% of the population has strong authoritarian tendencies, which will emerge under the right conditions.
Mm.
There's no reason to. You see it every single day. You see it. And I don't care how you see it. You see it on the small scale when you got some lady yelling at you on the subway for not wearing your mask. And then you see it on the large scale where you have governments instituting lockdowns that essentially shut down businesses, schools, and lives of hundreds of thousands of people.
Millions.
Yeah, it's just.
Hundreds
it's,
of million. Billions.
Yeah.
Billions.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it's horrible. And what interests me is that we saw this move in so swiftly. And so swiftly, people just accepted it.
Yeah. That's the power of masking things under the guise of the greater good and public safety.
Yep.
Because it's incredibly intelligent to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do that, then, you know, if you're doing something in the name of public safety and the general good and someone criticizes it, then you've got a massive stick to beat them with, right? You've got a lot of names to call that person because if they were truly acting against public safety, then, you know, it's easy to make that person look evil. It's easy to demonize them, call them selfish, say that they don't care about people's lives. You're a grandma killer. You're this, you're that, right? All of that stuff sort of sticks and it cows people because no one wants to be seen as if they're going against, you know, public safety or that they do want people. Like, firstly, no one holds that position. It's an absolute straw man.
Yep.
But that's why it's so effective. You know, it's so effective. We've seen these tactics being used a lot over the past few years in different things, and it's just a new version of it.
Yeah, people are afraid of social disapproval and being a pariah, and then the people on the other side are emboldened by the virtue points that they get for doing what they're doing. And I'm sure it feels great and wonderful. I'm sure it feels godly and divine to be like, I'm doing the right thing, and these other people aren't, and now I get to tell them how to do the right thing, and I need to get them to unlearn and relearn and reeducate themselves, as I said in my prior leftist days. But I'm sure I know it feels great because that was where I was, and I can only imagine how, you know, maybe not the majority of this country, but a large sum of it feels 20% with these authoritarian views. We're going to skip ahead a little bit. This is number four. Propaganda is just as effective in the modern day as it was 100 years ago. Access to limitless information has not made the average person any wiser.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really, really sad reality. The fact that we've never had more access to information, whether that be propagandized information or true information, than we do now, literal computers in our pockets. And again, I always take it back to Soviet Russia. It doesn't matter how limitless or how expansive the information that somebody throws in your face. Once you've subscribed yourself to an ideology and a narrative, it trumps all.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been really effective during COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as I said in the article, we used to think that the problem was just lack of access to information.
Mm-hmm.
You thought, okay, why are people ignorant? Why are people, you know, naive? It's because they don't have access to certain information. Now, the truth is, if you are an adult in 2021, you can learn pretty much anything, right? There's not a great excuse to not know basic facts, let's say at least in something that you are wanting to have an opinion and a position on, right? So we can't all know everything, right? We can't, nobody's an expert on every single subject,
sure.
But if you are going to have like a, I'm careful to not speak powerfully on anything where I know I don't have a clue.
Mm.
Right?
Yep.
But a lot of people lack that. I'm not known for my humility, but a lot of people lack that basic level of humility, right? There are some subjects like I will speak very openly and powerfully and authoritatively on because I've thought about them and I've considered the other side and I've looked at it from different angles. So someone can question me, challenge me, and I can respond. I won't just, but now everyone wants to like a jump in head first on everything and have these strong emotions and views and whatever, even if they know not even the most basic information or facts about the subject. And I think that coming back to the original point, just having now the power of the internet and social media, it actually gives people new propaganda channels as well.
It does.
So while it may seem that we should be more resistant and resilient to it when we have everyone tuned into their smartphones all the time and all of that, and you've got all these algorithms manipulating things, people getting locked into echo chambers online and offline, it can actually make it harder in a strange way to get to the truth and to determine real news from fake news, to determine truth from propaganda, to understand with the different biases and things at play. So I encourage people just to take things with a grain of salt, you know, and ask questions and look at things from different sides and different angles. Don't just, you know, if I say something, if I state some fact or whatever, and it sounds odd or it doesn't sound right, go verify it, right? Don't just say, oh, you know, Zuby said it, so it's true. I'm like, you know, I try to do my best to say what I believe is true or what I know to be true. But hey, don't just take your favorite pundit's word for it or your favorite person on social media or whatever. If it sounds weird or you're like, does that make sense? You know, go do your own research.
Yeah, I think it's a natural tendency of people because everything is so blurry and the facts are ever changing now that they attach themselves to a person or to an entity, that being the government. And they go, okay, well, whatever comes out of this one source is going to be absolutely true. So if I just lean on this source through, you know, the duration of my time here, everything is going to be fine. Now, a problem with that leads us to number five. Anything and everything can and will be politicized by the media, government, and those who trust them.
And this is a big problem in our age, is the politicization of absolutely everything. You know, politics has a role in the world. And, you know, we all talk politics to some degree, but it's not everything.
No.
You know, like in the world of entertainment or art or sport or a lot of things that bring people together, just day-to-day life, not everything has to be political. I think it's a massive shame that throughout this pandemic situation that we've seen the overt politicization of science, of medicine, of, you know, everything. It's all political, right? I mean, it's gone to such insane levels. I mean, literally, if you want to, like, one of the most stark examples of this is if you go back about a year ago, or certainly just maybe 14, 15 months ago, and you look at the groups of people who were, you know, by their own definition today, anti-vax, certainly vaccine hesitant, right?
Sure.
Up to the point of the vice president and even the current president, right? When the vaccines came out under the Trump administration, right?
You
all saw who was opposed to it and who was saying, I'm never putting that in my body. It hasn't been tested. I don't trust this. And then the switch of all those people who were literally saying, I'm never putting that in my body, to now saying, if you don't put this in your body, you should be shut out. This is in a year.
Yep.
Right. That's a real extreme switch right there. And when did the switch happen? The switch happens when the president changed. You've got people who, there are people outside right now who wear a mask because they don't want people to think they're Republicans.
Yeah.
That's a real thing.
It is.
That's a real thing. They're wearing the mask. You know, they're fully vaxxed. They got their masks on because they want to signal to their tribe that they are. And it's just, look, whatever your thoughts are on masks or vaccines or whatever, that's not even relevant to my point. It's just the fact that it's been so overtly politicized. Even individual medicines.
Yep.
Individual medicines have now been politicized. Right. Yeah. And people think they need to be against a potential treatment or a medicine or for a potential treatment or it's like, what is this? Like,
yeah.
It's so odd. I mean, you saw it prior with, you know, like you saw the politicization of sports with, especially last year with the whole BLM thing. And it was happening prior to that with, I know in the US you guys had, you know, players taking a knee, which somehow imported itself to my country of the UK. right? People protesting the police brutality. And I was like, guys, the police killed two people in the UK last year.
Right.
Right. Like, I think it was two. Don't quote, verify that. But yeah. I think they literally killed two unarmed people. And so, I don't know. It's this collective madness. People trying to fit in.
Yeah.
And not really thinking.
And emotional stories carry through, and they cut through fact, they cut through logic, they cut through reason, and then people just grasp onto it because they felt something visceral. I felt something visceral when I heard that, so that must be true. I remember when I was in Florida and COVID just started getting announced, and everybody was going crazy, and the toilet paper was gone, and the water was gone, and all the streets were empty. And at first I go, oh, well, this is scary. Something's going on here. And then a few weeks later, it starts to get politicized, and you see, well, I'm seeing this schism being created right now in my country, where this side of ideology believes this and this side of ideology believes this, and there's these people like running around like chickens with their heads cut off in the middle. And I thought, you know, this does not look like science or health to me. This does not look like somebody who's trying to keep people actually safe and actually give true information. And that was a big part of the wake up. So right now I think in this country there's a lot of those people who are just sitting in the middle, sitting in the fog of things, trying to figure out where everything is going, what's actually true. And those people are more graspable than ever. So if you're feeling afraid of not saying something now, maybe you should. Maybe you should.
Please do.
And
please,
I'm sure
do.
You've had that experience of people reaching out to you and saying, well, oh, I didn't truly know this until I heard you say it. Has that been a major occurrence for you?
Yeah, a lot. Because I've been speaking out. I mean, if you're talking about this pandemic situation particularly, I've been opposed to every measure, pretty much all the draconian measures. I've been opposed to it since like March 2020. And I've been vocal about that.
Yeah.
And it's actually been interesting because back in, you know, March, April, May, June last year, when I was speaking out against lockdowns and against mask mandates and against the business closures, against the stay at home orders, all that, right? The amount of flack I received, the names I was called, you know, people were literally saying that like I was directly responsible for killing people. Right? People were trying to put that on me. Right. That Zuby, literally, your words are your. I wonder how many people have died as a result of your tweets. Right. Did that level of emotional blackmail.
Gosh.
Right. Because I'm simply saying, yo, I'm pro freedom. You want to wear a mask? That's up to you. It shouldn't be mandated by the government. You want to stay at home? You want to take this precaution? You want to do this? That should be up to you. Right. You know what's best for yourself and your family. We're all in different demographics. Some people are more immunocompromised than others. Some people are older. Some people are younger. So you make your decision, right? That was my position.
Right.
Still is. Say it. Right?
Completely reasonable.
Right. I'm not anti-vax.
Right.
I'm anti-coercion. Right. If you want to take the vaccine, go ahead. Right. I've never even said to someone that like you shouldn't take it. Right. I think you should have the information. And you can do the cost benefit analysis, and you're an adult, you make your decision. That's fine. That's how it's always been. It's in the same way. There's nothing new under the sun. Viruses aren't new. Disease is not new. Vaccines are not new. Death is not new. What's new is the response, the hysteria, and the manipulation around it. That's what's new, right? The coercion. That is new. Whoever lost a friend because they didn't take the flu shot, whoever got uninvited from a family member's wedding or Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas because they didn't want to take a particular, no one, never, never. Right. This is the power of the media. This is the power of propaganda, right? And this is all happening over a virus with a well over 99% survival rate, over 99.9% in large swathes of the population, even without prior immunity or any treatment,
yeah.
Right? With it even high, right? So this is what you want to destroy the world over? This is what you want to blow up America, Europe? Like this is what people want to do. It doesn't make any sense. It's so disproportionate. Even if it were a much more killer virus, I'd still be opposed to the way many things have been handled here. But in this case, it's just utterly absurd. But if people have been playing this political theater for such a long time now that they can't just admit, like, we're just dealing with psychology now. If we're dealing with science, we're dealing with political science, and we're dealing with psychology. Because this is not about a virus. This is just about, you know, people trying to, from the top to the bottom, you know, from the government officials and the scientists and whatever to people on the street, because people also need to validate their worldview. People want to be congruent. People want to be congruent. So if you've been playing this game for 19 months now, for you to say, OK, I'm done.
Yeah.
or just to say, it's like, no, they want
it. That's tough.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah. I talk about this a little bit. Obviously I worked for the left. Everybody knows that. So I was an extreme angry leftist and I hated America. I hated everything. I hated the institutions. And now here we are. But that realization process of going from this is what I believe. Oh, but everything that I've ever known is wrong. And, you know, I subscribe to it. I not only subscribe to it, but I viewed my life through that lens and I led my life through that lens. That is a really tough realization to come to. Mm. Do you find that people, maybe people who lean towards this sort of authoritarian belief that we should regulate everything, they are resonating with your message, but just refuse to admit that that's the case?
In some cases, you know, I've converted a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like there's ones who I know for a fact because I've spoken to them or they've messaged me and they've been like, yeah, man, I wasn't really on board with you before. But as things have gone on,
right.
You were right.
You were right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I've had that. And but, you know, how many people have done that silently? I have no idea.
Yeah. It's
very possibly in the thousands, tens. I don't know. It could be hundreds of thousands. I don't know. But that's what it is. And it's not about me wanting to be right. It's just wanting to get to the truth, just mm-hmm. get to reality. Like if I'm wrong, like there's never been a time more ever in my life that I wanted to be wrong. Honestly, back when I was in like April, when I was back in March 2020 and people were saying, you know, flatten the curve, 2 weeks to 15 days to slow the spread, you know, it's just going to be a 2 week lockdown, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was saying, guys, it's not going to be 2 weeks. Like if you give this up, they're going to... And I was saying that and people calling me a grandma killer, blah, blah, blah. I wanted to be wrong. I really wanted to be wrong. I wanted to be, okay, cool. Like, you know, by summer, not even by summer, by spring, like, okay, stuff's just opened and, you know, the curve has been flattened. Of course I wanted that.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course.
When they started this whole rollout or whatever, and I was saying, like, you know, watch out for this vaccine passport. I was talking about vaccine passports last year. What was I called? A conspiracy theorist, an idiot, or you're making things up. It's not going to go that far, whatever. Now the same people are supporting it and saying, oh, yeah, it's actually a good idea. We should have this. And this is the thing where, you know, and there's other people who have been like, man, OK, like, you know, you were right. I don't want to be right on this stuff. Right. I'm super pro freedom, but I'm very hyper aware of the nature of government now and throughout history. And how these incremental things happen. I'm also a salesman. I do sales, mm-hmm. right? Like I've been selling stuff for decades. So I know that there's something called a compliance ladder, right? So you don't necessarily ask right off the bat for the biggest sale in the world, right? If you wanna, you know, if you are courting a female, mm-hmm. you don't go for the biggest ask right off the bat.
Right.
No, you build things up over time, right? You don't just see them in the street and say, oh, I want to marry you, or, you know,
yep.
I want to bed you or something. Right. No.
Right. like, you don't go for the kill, right?
No, you don't do that. You know, it's a small compliance, you know, do you remember what it started with? It started with the most sensible thing probably said throughout this whole thing. Wash your hands.
Yep.
Wash your hands. And then it was stand 6 feet apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was stay home. It's a bit of a big demand. If they even started with stay home, maybe more people would have been like, no.
Okay,
we've done this, we've done that, we'll do this one. Then it was wear a mask.
Yep.
Let's do this, do that. And each time you say yes, you're more likely to get that next yes because it's not so far away. When a compliance ladder breaks down is when you try to move too fast, too quickly,
mm-hmm.
right? And most people, again, maybe because most people don't do sales or they don't know it, they don't think of it in this way. So when I see that, and I just know the way that when people seize power and authority, they don't want to let it go. I mean, how many times have various leaders extended their emergency powers? You know, they get, oh, you know, we get 8 weeks of emergency. Oh, we'll, in some places, I think they've extended it like, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 times now. They just keep extending it. And if you can break the law as a leader by declaring an emergency, then you'll continue to declare emergencies so you can break the law.
Oh, absolutely. And couple that with the fact that people get to feel good while they give away their freedom to you is just, it's a recipe for just complete and utter tyranny.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's our next one, number 7. Most people believe the government acts in the best interest of the people, even many who are vocal critics of the government. Mm. And this spans across the entire spectrum,
it does.
Which is an interesting thing. Everybody knows my mom still works for the left. We have conversations about this not as often anymore because it gets contentious. But when we do talk about it, you know, I've never had a more vocal critic of the government than my mother and the leftists that I grew up with. Mm. And And the same thing goes for the right and even liberals. We know that small government was important to our founding. So inherently, we distrust much of the big government measures that take place. So we function really on this mutual distrust of the government. But all of a sudden, in the past couple of years, we've just adopted that they want our best interests always.
Yeah. I mean, I believe that the government does what is best for the government.
Yes.
For the most part. Sometimes that aligns with what's good or what's best for the people, mm-hmm. but not by default, right? The goal of a government is power and control and authority. That's what a government exists for. It exists to exert power, control, and authority, right? And that's what it is, right? A corporation exists to make profit.
Right.
Okay. So you should always be aware when a corporation is doing things. Vast majority of the time, 90% of the time, the goal is financial. That doesn't mean that they're doing something evil or nefarious or whatever. It's just that that's what a corporation does. That's mm-hmm. literally its job, a job of a government. And corporations are always trying to grow. Why? So that they can make more profit. If they're public, they can give money back to their shareholders, et cetera. Right. They want to keep growing and growing and growing. Government is the same. But instead of profit, replace that with power, control, authority, whichever word you want to use. Mm-hmm. So governments will start out a certain size and then they'll encroach on that and they'll grow here and they'll grow here and they'll grow here. The U.S. government, as far as I'm aware, UK, they're bigger than they've ever been, right? In terms of number of people employed by the state, the number of different areas that they're involved in. I mean, they're involved in all sorts of stuff that they were never supposed to be. And once they introduce something new, it stays there, right? They never get rid of it. It's mm-hmm. just, okay, we're adding this department and the department stays there. Or we're adding this thing. We're adding this. We're adding this. And over time, over the course of decades, you just have this gigantic behemoth. And people should just be aware of that. This isn't me saying never trust the government or never trust a corporation or everything they say is a lie. No, it's not that. It's just understand that fundamentally what they're about. When a politician is out there campaigning, and they're making promises and they're saying this and they're saying that. They're saying that because they want your votes and your votes give them power, control, and authority. You're electing them into that position. So you should always view it with a grain of salt and a degree of skepticism. Maybe that person's really about what they're saying.
Sure.
And they genuinely want it. And if that's the case, you should be able to challenge them and question them and get answers and hold their feet to the fire. If they do get elected, you should be able to say, hey, when you were campaigning, you said you were going to do this thing. What's going on, mm-hmm. right? They should always be accountable, always, because they're supposed to be representatives, as we said before.
Yeah, it's true. And now people just get to say things and do things without any accountability, mm-hmm. which sort of obviously lowers the prerequisite for entering a space and just saying things that are completely unfounded and just complete misinformation. And it's interesting to see, just watch as social issues pop up. It doesn't matter if it's COVID-related, immigration-related, gender-related. Watch as the government comes to the forefront with a social issue, and then all of these corporations move in lockstep. And to see that and to see how they work in tandem is a really, really interesting thing to me. And of course, you know, maybe they could be doing it just for your own heart and your own wellness, but I would venture to say they're profiting off of what they're doing. Now we're going to move on to number 10 here. When sufficiently frightened, most people will not only accept authoritarianism, but demand it.
Ooh.
Give me your take on this one.
Yeah, this is a big one. This is a really important one, actually, because it explains a lot of what's going on. And this is, so there are lots of different types of people in the world. And one of the core, I don't like to use the terms the left and the right, because I think it's a bit of an oversimplification. But mm-hmm. if I'm going to use those terms, one of the fundamental differences between them are a systems versus individual based approach. Or one could say, I sometimes describe it as an external locus of control versus an internal locus of control, right? So if you have more of an external locus of control, that's, I think, what leads to the embrace of authoritarianism mm-hmm. by the state, because you don't truly and absolutely believe in the individual and individual's capacity and ability to make decisions and make reasons.
Absolutely.
So everything is about the government or the system or the structure. It's all collective. Mm-hmm. It's all collective minded, right? It's not about like, okay, you know what? I trust that individual adults are generally going to make decisions that not necessarily are always what's best or even what's best for them, mm-hmm. but what they perceive, what they believe is.
Right.
And most people are decent and are not actually going around trying to harm people, let alone kill people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So even if maybe, you know, people disagree here and there, it's a much greater threat to try to force things on people collectively than to just allow these individuals to make their decisions. And then when you have people who have more of an internal locus of control, that's where people believe in, you know, personal responsibility and accountability and knowing what's best for yourself.
Yep.
You know, I believe everyone sitting here believes, you know what's best for you better than some bureaucrat in the government does. They don't even know who you are. Right. Mm-hmm. They're telling you like what's like, you don't even know who I am. You don't even know my name. Right. This is one of the maddest things that's been going on. Right. I'm into health and fitness. I was into health and fitness before it was cool. Mm-hmm. I wrote a book on it.
Before, okay? It was cool.
all of a sudden,
yeah.
I've got random people on the internet trying to tell me and make demands, telling me what's best mm-hmm. for me or what's best for my own family. You think I don't care about my own parents and my own family more than you, Mr. Random Internet Person,
mm-hmm.
right? Of course I do. And I trust that I believe that for other people. So in each person's situation, okay, you know, you can work out what's the best approach for you, right? What you're comfortable with, what makes sense for people around you, so on and so forth. And so I think the reason why this happens, you know, is when people are afraid, nothing brings out base sort of primal instinct more than fear.
Mm-hmm.
Right. When people are afraid, they default back to, how would I put it? They kind of default to a certain situation. And for a lot of people, when they're afraid, they look up.
Right. Right.
Right. They look up. And especially if you don't see God there,
mm-hmm.
what do you see? You see the government.
Yep. Yep.
It's not by accident that most people who are sort of hyper status, shall we say, don't believe in any supernatural higher mm-hmm. power, right? They don't believe in God. So the next highest thing, government becomes God, because it's the next highest thing,
yep.
right? Above yourself. And so I think that it's a natural human thing to, you know, you're frightened, you're startled, you want something, someone to take the reins, take control, like tell me what to do, right? There's some alarm goes off in this building, it's like, tell me what to do.
Absolutely.
Right? Tell me what to do.
Absolutely.
But for other people, it's like, okay, they have that trust in themselves and
they
other individuals. So yeah, so they are more willing to push back. And that's why you get that clash between the individualists and the collectivists. And this is something that's existed throughout history.
Yeah, it's so patterned, which is the interesting thing for me is just reading more in depth into history and just recognizing how often this happens. And it doesn't often end well.
No.
Which is the even scarier part. What is your view on, you know, where this leads? Because obviously, historically, this does not end in a great situation for any of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the great dangers of collectivism is it's willing to override and crush the individual
mm-hmm.
in the name of the collective.
Yep.
And so what is unique about the Western world, what is unique about the country like the USA is the individual is respected
mm-hmm.
and the individual rights are respected
right.
And that's how it's supposed to be. That's how it's supposed to function. Has it always been perfect all throughout history? Absolutely not.
Right.
Right. Even now it's not perfect, but that's a hard thing to maintain because it kind of goes against nature in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Human beings are weird because we're simultaneously a very individualistic and a very collectivist species.
Right. We are, right? We go in packs.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
Really do,
yeah.
Naturally.
We're not literal herd animals. Like, you know, some, like, why do people call people sheep? Right. Cause sheep are
yes.
literal. Like they just move in like a literal herd.
Right.
And they're not out there individually doing their
exactly.
thing. Right. It's just absolute conformity.
Yes.
Move together. And humans are kind of like this weird combination of both, where we have all this like diversity in all these different
mm-hmm.
ways, and everyone is really individualistic and very much has their own personality
mm-hmm.
and interests and things they want to do and beliefs. But also we're very social. So I think it's so important to recognize that and to believe that the greater good is actually allowing each individual to determine their individual good.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And sure, there can be guidelines and structures and rules. And, you know, if you're talking about this, you know, certain laws and stuff in place so that you are not infringing upon other people's, right? I can't just come and harm that person or take their stuff or whatever, right? Like that needs to be protected against. But outside of that, you know, and of course you have, you know, this is why you have family structures, you have guidance. There are so many structures that exist outside of the government, right? I think mm-hmm. so many people, when I talk to people who are like way more pro-government than I am, just in general, something they often seem to miss is that I'm not saying that I'm not in the dismantle everything camp, right? But there are other structures that exist out there. There are the family, there's families, there's friendship groups, there's communities, there's religious communities, mm-hmm. there are, you know, hobby groups, that like there are a lot of structures, there's charities, there's things that exist outside the government that can provide some of these things, right? Because oftentimes, if you say, oh, okay, I think the government shouldn't do this, people are immediately like, oh my gosh, so how would that work? It's like, dude, there's other things that are in place, right? And could be in place that don't need to go. You don't need to go straight to the top all the time. Mm-hmm. You don't need to go straight to the top all the time. In the U.S., I mean, the federal, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think the federal government should do that many things.
I completely agree with you.
Should do a few things very well.
Yep.
Right. Say, I don't know, like national border security, mm-hmm. And, you know, some degree of perhaps I don't even know if it needs to deal with the criminal justice system in this country,
right?
Because you've got the states, so maybe not. But yeah, it shouldn't do that many things.
Yet here we are.
Yeah, here we are. People always want to look higher. People always want to look at the top.
It's interesting. Yeah. When we see, again, issues of any sort pop up within our communities, our immediate response is, let's look at the current administration. Let's mm-hmm. look up. Let's go as high as we possibly can into the hierarchy of what is America, and that's who's to blame for it, whoever's mm-hmm. sitting there. And more often than not, it's your local sheriff. It's your mayor. it's your school board. And we just paint a broad brush over these things and just continue to look up to this person who really, honestly, at this point is a figurehead.
Yes, absolutely.
It's not really doing anything.
And in this current case, doesn't even know what's going on.
Yeah. Now I'm going to do one more here, and then we're going to end the show with a little game that Taylor's put together for us.
I don't know. This is so good. I feel like we should just continue to. Well,
how much time do you have?
How are we doing? I can do a little while longer.
Okay. Let's do a few more here.
Let's go to 45. Shoot for that.
Okay. Shoot for that. Perfect. Number 12 here. And this is an important one. Most people value safety and security more than freedom and liberty, even if said safety is merely an illusion.
Mm. Yeah. You know, there's always going to be a trade-off between freedom and safety, or at least a trade-off between freedom and the illusion of safety. That's just a reality of it, right? So what is it that, all right, we can run this across a lot of different things. Okay,
sure.
Let's take something controversial, especially with me being a Brit, right? the Second Amendment,
mm-hmm.
okay? Most people around the world, certainly in the UK and Europe, do not understand the Second Amendment at all. Why? Because they say it's dangerous. Guns are dangerous. Guns are lethal weapons. So the less of them out there, the less people that have them, the better.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of people, particularly on the left side of the aisle in the USA, also make the same argument. If they had their way, actually, many won't say this outright, but mm-hmm. they want guns banned.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? They absolutely want guns banned. And so that's a real interesting one. Because that is a real clash between safety, or the illusion of safety, and freedom,
yep.
right? And it also shows the different ways people view safety and security.
Mm-hmm.
On a sort of short-term basis, it can certainly look like, okay, so the USA has far more gun crime than the UK does, or Australia does.
Yep.
Look at Australia right now.
Mm-hmm.
Would that have happened if you had an armed population?
Absolutely not.
I don't believe so.
No.
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think it could have gone that far.
It can't.
Right? And so, right, or if you look back to, I know people never, ever want to compare things to, I know it's taboo to compare anything to Nazi Germany, right? But if the Jews and other persecuted people in Nazi Germany had been armed?
Yep.
Would that have happened in the way it did?
And it's an apt comparison.
Right? There certainly would have been a freaking fight.
Yes.
Right? I don't know. But like, there would have been a resistance. So this is the thing. In the short term, sure, I'm willing to accept that if there were like far less guns in the USA, that, you know, you'd have lower general homicide rates.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm willing to accept that. And, you know, perhaps you'd have fewer mass shootings. But in the long term, right, if you think of what the Second Amendment is for, to keep a yes. check on governmental tyranny, and we know nothing, man, there's no greater killer in the world than governments. Real talk. Think of every mass atrocity that's happened around the world
government,
in history.
Government,
who
government.
Did it? Yep. Always the government. Yep. Always the government, right?
And typically
always.
A collectivist one.
Exactly. So. Always. So nobody can murder like the government can.
No.
So that's important to recognize. And I understand it's uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable to sort of think that way. And it seems a little bit paranoid because people mm-hmm. always want to think, oh, that can't happen here or, you know, whatever. We're past that. Trust me, if you went back to the year 1900 or you went back to 1910 and you told people around Europe, especially, like what was going to come in the next 50 years,
they
wouldn't have believed you. Be like, what are you talking about? We're not barbarians. Like, we're modern people. We're past that. Right? What we did in the past.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it can always happen. We're still living through history.
Yeah. We feel this great disconnect from history for whatever reason. Mm. And I obviously there's a major shift to stop teaching actual true history here in America. I don't know if that's the case for you in the UK, but
not quite.
Yeah. We're changing up historical teachings here in the United States. And the more you do that, the more disconnected people become from history and the easier these things become because you have no foundation for believing that anything else would go wrong because why would it? It didn't happen historically. I don't know about that. And even if it did, it's so far removed from me. And right now in America, we are painting our founding fathers as white supremacists, racists who don't want anybody to be successful. And the Constitution is just an old piece of paper. But that's your safeguard right there. Mm-hmm. And it spells out not just your individual rights, but your God-given individual rights, not your government-given individual rights. Mm-hmm. And once we forget that, it's gone.
Yeah. And that whole notion, so many Americans don't understand that is unique to America.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That notion is so unique to America, right? I say this as a British person. I freaking love the UK. Mm-hmm. I love the UK. I don't like the direction it's been trending in recently, mm-hmm. but I love the country. But the notion of rights in the USA viewed as negative rights, which you have by nature and the role of government is to not infringe upon them mm-hmm. versus the notion around the world, which is that your rights come from the government. That fundamental shift it's embedded in the culture. It's not just in politics. It's kind of everywhere. And I think that's one of the coolest things about the USA. That's something I absolutely love about this country. I think that they nailed it. Right. And it's trendy now to, you know, criticize the founding fathers. And the founding fathers had a lot of hypocrisies. Right.
Sure.
Obviously. Right. They were living in a time where slavery is normalized. They're there talking about about individual rights and man being equal under God, while some of them are holding slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Massive contradiction.
Yep.
But in terms of the actual idea they were espousing, they nailed that. They nailed it. Right. In terms of the ideas that you should base rights upon and the idea that should sort of underpin a nation as a whole. I think that they nailed that more than any other. I don't think any other country has nailed that in the way that the USA has. And the freedom of speech is probably one of the easiest and greatest examples of that.
Yep.
The notion that you have actual freedom of speech. That's not a global
norm. It's not standard. No, it is not. And people don't think that.
No,
yeah,
dude, even in Canada, in the UK, you know, like I can be arrested for if I tweeted the wrong thing or like posted the wrong thing on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
I could be prosecuted.
Right.
I could be prosecuted. And this is not even me saying I don't know. I know people who have been investigated for their tweets and their Facebook posts in the UK.
Look at that Count Dankula.
Count Dankula. Yeah, I know
him.
I know him. He got prosecuted.
Yes, he did.
For a joke.
Yep.
Right.
When I saw that, I could not believe, but it shows you the scope of just how important that freedom of speech mm-hmm. is, because that was a wild story.
Yeah, it was wild. And, you know, I speak as someone who grew up in the Middle East. I grew up in Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You can't just say whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, you know, I'm not like generally the thing with freedom of speech is so many people think that it's like people think people defend it as an excuse to because they want to say vicious and nasty things.
Right.
Right. When you say you support absolute freedom, first thing people always jump to is, oh, so, you know, should people just be able to, I don't know, scream the N-word at you down the street
mm-hmm.
or should be able to, and it's like, do you think that the only thing stopping people from being absolute morons and vicious people is like laws? No. Again, this is that statist mentality, right? I'm an absolute. I don't even cuss.
Yeah.
Right? I don't cuss. I'm not pro freedom of speech because I want to say like as much profanity and nasty stuff as I can. It's because if you suppress people's ability to speak, you suppress their ability to think.
Yep.
You suppress debate. Because everything, man, offense is so subjective.
Offense is
so subjective. So the notion that you're going to try to monitor or censor or stop anything that potentially could or does upset or offend someone, you cannot have a difficult conversation without risking offending someone. It's impossible. Anytime you have a difficult conversation, especially the more people who are involved in it or the larger the audience is,
mm-hmm.
if you're talking to a million people and you're talking about something that's contentious or difficult, you're going to upset some people in there, you know, maybe even a couple hundred, maybe a couple thousand. Yep. It's just what it is. If you're discussing any tough issue,
mm-hmm.
you're going to run the risk of offending people. But, you know, being offended firstly is not the worst thing in the world. You know, I don't think human beings should directly seek to offend each other for the fun of it.
Right.
That's just malicious. But I'd rather some people get their feelings hurt here and there than we're not allowed to be free and we're not allowed to have conversations and we're not allowed to have debates and come to conclusions. All of that should be maintained. It shouldn't even be a partisan issue at all.
A
partisan issue at all. Like everyone across the board should just be like, all right, you know, pro freedom of speech. You can say what you want, you know, and you shouldn't be arrested or prosecuted or whatever for it. And may the best ideas win.
Exactly. And that's how we should all be functioning. As Jordan Peterson would say with his whole debacle with Bill C-16, that dialogue is the avenue to truth. And once you've tried to stifle dialogue in any way, and especially an infringement on free speech, you're going to shroud the truth. And that's what we're going to lose nearly immediately after that happens. And that's what we're seeing now. One more here, and then we're going to play our little game to close out the podcast for today.
Okay.
Number 14, a significant percentage of people thoroughly enjoy being subjugated.
Oh, I think we can do a better one.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do a better one. Okay. 15.
The science has evolved into secular pseudo-religion for millions of people in the West. This is absolutely true. This religion has little to do with science itself.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So the science, I say the science, that's like capital T, capital S. That's a very different thing to science. Sometimes I do science with a dollar sign as the S, right? Because again, this is something that it's been just so bizarre.
Yeah.
Right. It's been follow the science, trust the experts. Every country, follow the science, trust the experts.
We've personified it.
Yes. The science is being spoken about as if it's an individual or an institution, right? In the USA, you would think there's only one doctor and scientist in this country who is Lord Fauci.
Yep.
Who he himself said, did you see it when he said that attacks on him are attacks on science themselves, right? I mean, he literally thinks he is the science, right? He thinks he's a deity. And so do other people, right? And that's bizarre. That's as anti-scientific as you get, right? When you get people who typically are like, I don't know, anti-theistic and, you know, call themselves super pro-science and pro-reason, oftentimes, you know, they're now exhibiting many of the behaviors that they claim that they've been mocking religious people for, right? Going along with dogma, not asking enough questions, you know, trusting, blindly trusting authority, so on and so forth. And this is what's been going on. Like when you see people walk in a restaurant, and by the way, this is a global phenomenon. Every city around the world, even without a mask mandate now, this little ritual people do where they walk in a restaurant, put a mask on before they enter, sit down, take it up. Bro, that's a ritual.
Yep.
Like that's a ritual, right? Like religious people are open with it. We're like, okay, yeah, like that's a thing is religious in nature, right? You're not trying to explain it throughout science. You're not trying to use science to explain how Holy Communion or Mass is, you know, the transubstantiation, right? You're actually, you know, the bread. This is how the science turns the bread into the body of Christ and the wine into the blood. Like, no, like you understand it's a religious ritual. So people are doing these religious rituals and running around doing a whole bunch of doing all sorts of like bizarre things and saying these strange things. And I'm just like, man, this is I tend to call it more of a cult than a religion for a lot of people. You know, I've compared vaccination to baptism. the way people get so like aggressive and like people want to excommunicate people who are unclean. If you haven't had it, right, you're trying to do, it's weird. It's weird. I feel like this topic could probably be an interesting book.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah, there's a lot here.
You could write a biblical take on following the science and list all the sins that people could do to go against this personified person.
Yeah, it should have been, instead of follow the science and trust the experts, should have been question the science and challenge the experts.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Or vice versa. That's what it should have been. Because the bias in science is all about asking questions and challenge.
It's about being wrong over and over.
If you can't question it, it's not science. Mm-hmm. It's dogma, right? Yeah. You should be able to question it. Like all throughout this situation, the so-called, you know, scientists and the public health experts and whatever, they should be standing up there taking all sorts of questions. Like every day, every week, they should be having to defend what they're proposing. Right. If they're there and they're coming and they're saying, OK, we want to have a lockdown and we're going to have a mess, there should be people holding their feet to the fire saying, OK, what are the consequences for this? How long is this lockdown going to be? How are you going to know if it's effective? Mm-hmm. What about does this infringe upon people's civil rights? How does that balance out? How many lives do you believe are going to be saved by this lockdown? How are you going to measure that? Right. Mask mandates. OK, how do we know that masks are effective? Mm-hmm. Right. What type of masks? Is it just any piece of cloth, or does it need to be an N95, or does it need to be surgical? What all of these questions, how do you know it's effective? Okay, we've got this data coming out. It doesn't look like it's making a difference. What about this? Should we change it? All of it, you know, questions about vaccines, about natural immunity, there's so many questions that are not being asked that should be. Mm-hmm. Different countries. What happened with China?
Right.
What happened with China?
Right.
What happened in Africa? Why don't we talk about China? Why don't we talk about Africa? You're talking about billions and billions of people, right? Apparently dealing with the same threat. China to this day is claiming they had less than 5,000 deaths.
Yeah, not a peep.
Does that not sound odd to someone? You're here saying the USA has had over 600,000 people die of this virus. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me the most populous country in the world, which was the epicenter of the virus itself, you're telling me only 5,000 people died? What vaccines were they? They were rolling out vaccines spring last year. What vaccine was that?
Right.
They didn't start rolling it out in the West until the end of the year. Like what? There's so many shenanigans going on. Why are certain treatments being suppressed? Right. What's going on? What happened in Africa? How come that whole continent with, you know, worse healthcare systems and worse infrastructure, whatever, many dense cities, they breezed through it.
Yep.
Many countries barely did lockdowns or whatever. Right. So what's going on even within the USA? You know, you've got various states, you've got 50 different approaches to mandates and lockdowns and whatever. You look at the data, this doesn't seem to be any correlation here. 19 months in, why are these questions not being asked? Remember when Texas dropped all the things back in, what was it, March?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone said that they're all going to die, right? Biden called it Neanderthal thinking. People were saying that those people should be accountable. Wait, hang on. You said that this was going to happen and it didn't. Why?
Yeah.
What happened?
No accountability. Should
other states follow suit? Right. OK. Even if you were scared, it's like, OK, you should be watching and like, OK, they're doing this. Same in Europe. Sweden never locked down. Sweden never had a mask mandate. Sweden's death rate per capita from this virus lower than plenty of places that did mask mandates, that did lockdown. Explain.
Yep.
Right. There's so many questions. I'm not a journalist. I'm just a guy who's curious, who's trying to get to the truth. So why am I the one who's asking these questions? If we had proper journalists, they should be out there daily. They should be holding the authority. Yeah, I mean, they used to do it with Trump, right?
Yeah. Right? Held his feet to the fire.
Yeah, they held his feet, like they put his feet in the fire.
Yep.
You know, they tried to put his head in too. But anyway, that's what they should be doing. So let me stop ranting.
I really want to ask before, I think we can forget about the game because this is just too good to keep going.
But, okay, perfect.
But how do we increase the appetite for, like, in the average person for the truth? Like, because right now, as it is, it seems like the average person's appetite in the U.S. is trending more in the direction of enforcing the mainstream narrative, you know, making sure that we comply. And how do we get people to start thinking for themselves and wake up out of the tendencies toward authoritarianism? How do we get people to stop outsourcing their own thinking and their own ability to look at data and weigh risks and outsourcing that to the government, to the experts, quote unquote? How do we wake people up out of this cult and religion that is just compliance and following the mainstream. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
It's a great question. How did you wake up out of it?
I've
kind of always been here, so.
I lived in it and I, you know, started a job where I was going around talking to young people, indoctrinating them into the ideology, and they had questions for me. Mm-hmm. And then when those questions arose and I realized, well, no, truth is a value of mine and I feel like I'm not being truthful right now and I don't have really the facts or the backing to ground what I'm telling you right now. And then I had to go on a search to find what that actually was. But I think people are skipping that step of going on the search and just, you know, sticking to what they've known. I mean, we've on this show talked about the sort of mass psychosis that's happening right now. And oftentimes what breaks out of that is building a parallel society where you're not going with that ideological subversion that the other society is going with. And ultimately you're more successful and people will see that and go, oh, that's what freedom looks like. That's what liberty looks like. And they're not dying. And maybe there's something wrong there, but it has to really hit you personally. And I don't know. It does have to be a personal hit.
Yeah. Oftentimes people don't feel it or care or pay attention until it affects them personally in some way or someone very close to them sometimes. That's just the reality of it. And it's unfortunate. But I think the best we can do is to communicate, to talk. I think conversations like this are important.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, whether they're not everything needs to be recorded. I think the conversations people have at home and with their family and with their coworkers and all of that is important,
mm-hmm.
right? Even just to introduce, oftentimes you just need to plant seeds in people's brains, right? It's rare to get someone to, in a single conversation, change a view or perspective that they've held on to for a long time, especially one they're emotionally attached to. But you can plant a little seed, right? You can just say, wait, okay, well, what about that? Right? And an honest person does have to go, okay, I need to go back and investigate this one. Mm-hmm. And then you look at it, especially if it's something that, you know, has facts or data behind it. And you're just like, okay, that doesn't align with my perception or what I was saying. Let me give you a great example from my own perspective. So I'm someone who hasn't really shifted much politically. I've kind of always been, if I have to label it, you know, center right from young. But something that where this happened with me, where the narrative and what I believed ended up being very different from the reality was several years ago, maybe about 5 years ago now, because I'm from the UK and in the UK and internationally, there are certain stories and narratives from the US that really get embedded and make the news globally. Okay. Yeah. And one of these things is, you know, black people being killed by police in America. Okay. So there are several big stories, whether, you know, even way before George Floyd, you know, you had the, I don't know, Eric Garner, Philando Castile, Michael Brown, like there's a lot of different stories and cases coming out. And every time you see one in the UK media, it's always a black guy being killed by a white police officer in the USA. And the narrative is that that's the only people this happens to.
Right.
And that's the majority of it. Okay. I remember when I first looked up was it on the FBI website, but I went and I looked at the stats, you know, broken down by race/ethnicity of, okay, in this year, in 2017, what was the breakdown of police shootings in the USA? And I'm like, I remember learning that. I was like, oh, they kill more white people than they kill black people.
Yep. I went through that too.
Okay. Yes. As a percentage of the population, it's more black people. But I was like, I've never even heard or seen a story, let alone know a name of a white person killed by the police in the USA, right? I can name multiple black people who have been killed, right, over the years. Mm-hmm. I've seen this one, I've seen that one, I've seen that one, I've seen that one in different circumstances. I was like, they don't even talk about that. Like that was one thing where, because I also had the belief that, man, like, because there was a period of time where there were like multiple high profile ones. And I was like, man, like what's going on in the States? Like what's the deal here? You know, I was never on the, oh, like everything is racist narrative or whatever. But I was like, man, this is weird. Like what's going on here? Why does this keep happening? And then I looked at it and I was like, man, I'm only seeing a fraction of the picture here, because people always run with the racial narrative on it. And it's like, no, like you need to go up a level.
Yep.
Right. This is a police issue. This is a police issue, right? If these situations are happening, I remember seeing the Daniel Shaver shooting, which is probably the most egregious police shooting I've ever seen. And that was a white guy shot by a white cop in the USA, right? The one in the hotel.
Yep.
And I was horrible. Whoa. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that was a good example for myself where I had a particular narrative and I was like, you know, with the mainstream one for the most part. And then I was like, oh, actually this is different. The way it's framed is not truthful.
Right.
Right. It's not a truthful framing. If it were truthful framing, you'd talk about these cases, but you'd also talk about these other ones and you'd actually put the facts and the data and the statistics out there. Like, you know, I went and dug for it and I was like, ooh, okay. Like I need to change my understanding of this particular issue because it's not what they're saying.
Right.
It's not what they're saying. And they're ignoring the majority of it says a lot.
Yeah.
So that's an example. So I think people need to be, so individual experience. And then I think also just kind of being confronted by something where you have to, if you're an honest person, just go, okay, I've got new information here.
Yeah.
I need to integrate that into what I believe.
Yeah, view things with skepticism and, you know, find out what's true. And there's something to be said about the importance of parallels. You found two parallel situations that were treated completely differently. Mm-hmm. And when you see those juxtaposed against each other, that's a big light bulb moment for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, it happened to me multiple times. Just seeing things and how one person was treated for doing this and how the other person gets it. And there's nothing different between these two people except their skin color or their gender or what side of the aisle they fall on. And that tends to be a big awakening moment. And again, it is a personal moment. It's not something that you can just go out and have conversations with and suddenly everybody's mind's changed. But like you said, if you plant that little seed of doubt in somebody's brain every single time they come to that subject, that seed grows a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger. And it sort of just bites away at you until you feel like, oh, I have to look into this. I can't keep letting this sort of gnaw away at me any longer.
Can't live in denial eternally.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been a great discussion.
Awesome.
Zuby, thank you so much for coming on our program. Zuby does have a Stories of Us that's going to be coming out with PragerU here shortly. So we'll keep an eye out for that for you guys, and we will share that on our show when it does come out. Zuby, how can people support you?
Sure thing. So you can find me on all social media at Zuby Music, Zuby Music. I've got my book available, Strong Advice, Zuby's Guide to Fitness for Everybody. You can get that or any of my music or merchandise at teamzuby.com. And my new album, Word of Zuby, is also available at teamzuby.com. Or if you prefer digital, you can get it on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever else you get your music.
Fantastic. And we'll keep an eye out for that Stories of Us episode as it comes out. Guys, please like, subscribe, click the notification bell if you love this discussion to be notified when we go live every single day, 2:30 PST, 5:30 Eastern. If you would like to listen to this podcast rather than watch it, you can go to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Play. Please leave us a 5-star review there so we can let you know that you love the podcast. You can let everybody else know that you love the podcast. And if you'd like to get a text notification sent to your phone for this live,
which
text
did go out today, by the way.
Oh, it did.
Yes, it should have. Let us know if it worked, guys.
This is new for you guys. Do you feel like it's Christmas? Text live to 41776. Again, thank you, Zuby, so much for being on.
You're welcome. Awesome. Happy to be here.
We'll see you guys tomorrow. Bye.
Peace.